Welcome to the Female Athlete Project. My name is Chloe Dalton. I'm an Olympic gold medalist in rugby sevens, and because I have commitment issues, have also played two other sports at professional level. The last two seasons, I've played for Carlton in the AFLW, and prior to that, played for the Sydney Uni Flames in the Women's National Basketball League. I'm currently training full-time with the Australian Rugby Sevens for the now Tokyo 2021 Olympics. One of my favourite things to do is to head down to the beach, grab a coffee and the paper, click to the back page and read about sport. I've had enough of only reading stories about men's sport, so I decided to do something about it. One day, female athletes will be recognised by their achievements and not by their gender. Until then, I'm going to chat to and share the stories of epic Aussie female athletes. This episode is brought to you by Workplace Law and Athletes Authority, who are both incredible supporters of the Female Athlete Project. This week's guest is my Carlton teammate, Taylor Harris. Taylor has played in the AFLW since its inception in 2017 and has been named in the All-Australian side on three occasions. In 2018, she was awarded Mark of the Year, and in 2019 was photographed kicking a goal that will go down in history. Not for the kick itself, but for her response to online trolls that spread across the globe. In that same year, Taylor won the Australian titles for both the middleweight and super welterweight boxing. Besides all the impressive stuff she does in sport and the causes that she has championed, as you'll hear, she's just a good person who will do anything to support her mates. I hope you enjoy it. Taylor Harris, welcome to the Female Athlete Project.
I'm very glad to be virtually here.
You're virtually. I would have loved to have done it in person. We were hoping that we could have caught up in Melbourne and done it in real life, but next season we're on.
We are on next time. Definitely in real life, please. I'm not liking this Zoom situation. Feels less personal.
Yeah, I know. I've had enough of the Zoom, but I'm looking forward to having a chat with you today. You're almost midway through the AFLW season, which has been pretty up and down so far in terms of everything with Corona and games being cancelled and moved and kind of finding out week to week what that looks like. How's it been so far for you?
Well, what you just said at the end, finding out week to week who we're playing and where the game is and things like that is pretty challenging from a preparation point of view, obviously, but then also, I guess, mentally, like just preparing yourself for a Friday, Saturday or Sunday game, there's a difference. So I think that one also plays into it. And then, knowing in advance if you're going to which caliber of team you're going to be. So, as much as the competition isn't out of balance too much, there are teams that you would prepare completely differently to another team, and that could actually factor into the week earlier. You know, players resting, or there are plenty of different scenarios that are affected. But in saying that, it's the same for every single team, so it's not like some teams are, you know, in a different position. We're all in the same position. So it's one of those adapt things, and whoever adapts best will win.
Mm-hmm. How different is your headspace going into a game? You were saying then about like a Friday night game versus say like a Sunday Arvo game. And is it different depending on which opposition you're coming against as well?
Well, I think Friday night comes around very quick, and particularly with training schedule. So obviously we normally train on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And so that would then change on a Friday night game. It would potentially be either a Monday, Wednesday, maybe a captain's run on Thursday and then the game on Friday, or we'd stick to Tuesday, Thursday, and then play on Friday. So it changes things up in terms of scheduling. But then if we're playing on a Sunday, for example, again, that changes the schedule during the week because you don't want too much time in between training and playing. Or, you know, do you put a captain's run in the middle of the day on a Saturday in summer? Is that going to be detrimental because of the, you know, the heat? Should we be outside? There's so many different factors. And I love it because it's like everyone has different preparation methods and things like that. And I just think team sports, all these factors that come in, even the ones that are out of our control, make the game interesting and make the result and the contest even more exciting.
How are you on game day? I know when we've got like a Friday night game, I feel like the day goes for so long and I've got to like plan things to keep me busy because it goes for ages. What are you like on game day?
Well, I like to sleep in as much as I can.
Loves to sleep in.
Yeah, I love to sleep in. I'm pretty relaxed. Like I'll do whatever is happening that day. whether it was pre-planned or I just make plans last minute to go have lunch or hang out with people, walk the dog or something along those lines. At the moment, I train, if we're talking about a Friday game, I train people one-on-one boxing just down at the park. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're always booked in for Friday, so I'll still train them, even though it's a little bit of exertion and things like that. But I feel like it's not detrimental. If anything, it'll wake my body up a little bit for a game, either that night or the following day. So at the moment, this Friday, for example, I will have clients, I guess you'd call them, but training friends. And then the following day, we obviously fly out and play or you know, play whenever or wherever we are.
Nice. I want to go back to Taylor Harris as a little kid. Can you tell me a little bit about what you were like growing up and whether sport was kind of a big part of your childhood as a family?
It was. It was my childhood, I suppose. It was my brother and I were playing footy at the local footy club every training session. I'd be there, you know, with him. I was his little sidekick, I think, up until about 10 or 12, and then things changed. Got a bit less sidekicky and more like actual kicky, and I would kick him when he wasn't ready. And yeah, and I mean that was it. We were just at sport, whether mum and dad were running us to training or to a game on the weekend, footy or soccer for school or swimming carnival or athletics carnival. And I loved participating in all the school sports mostly because I would likely get a day off school if mm-hmm. I made it into the representative team. Mm-hmm. So that was a real goal of mine. And yeah, in terms of parents' influence on sport, dad was an AFL player, or he played AFL in Queensland. Mum loved activity. Like she, you know, kind of like me, joined in everything at school, she says, and is an active person, healthy as well. So yeah, I was always brought up less to play sport exactly, more to was encouraged to do whatever it was that I wanted to do. And I was an active kid, so mm-hmm. it was sport for me. And that meant team sport or bike riding or skateboarding or scootering or, you know, running around the block, hanging out with friends and playing dodgeball as opposed to computer games. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate. I had a great childhood in a very safe and, you know, friendly neighborhood just in Brisbane. Not too busy or anything. I could run around the street and not worry too much about getting struck by a car. Whereas I feel like in Melbourne now, living here and kind of looking at the neighborhoods, especially where I live, it's quite, you know, traffic is a thing. Mm. Whereas when I was growing up, it wasn't. There was no traffic. You didn't think about traffic. A car would go past every now and then. But yeah, I would think kids with trams and, you know, the density of Melbourne would be a different story.
Yeah, and it seems a bit different these days with the kids like not getting outside as much and doing all that kind of thing. So I wonder if that's a part of it.
Well, yeah, I wonder too. And I feel like you and I grew up in a time when we were just on the cusp of, we were just old enough to get involved in the technology stuff, but not too much mm-hmm. that it kind of took away from our upbringing. But mm-hmm. like I didn't have a phone when I was younger. I had maybe a flip phone for safety if I walked home on my own, mm-hmm. but that was about it. Snakes, I'd play Snake, and that's, you know, so as far as it got.
Rest in peace, Snake. So,
yeah, rip. Rest in peace, Inopias. But it was a good time.
So did you get to play footy all the way through from when you were 4 or 5 years old when you started to growing up as a teenager?
I did. I played for the boys since I was 5 with mixed, but in reality I never came across another girl on another team or in my team.
Wow.
So I suppose I could say in the boys league mm-hmm. and I loved it. I didn't notice. I don't think I even knew like that was a difference. Mm. I don't think anyone made any, you know, anything disrespectful that, you know, there's a girl I'd played in the same group of boys and they'd always look after me and not treat me any different, always kick me the ball if I was in the right position and everything like that. So I was, I think, fortunate to have the group that I did, and the football club was very adamant to make sure that no one treated me differently just because I was a girl. And then I suppose when I got to the point where girls aren't allowed to play in the mixed competition, which was 14, I was pretty challenging because I had no idea. I assumed because I was good enough, I could continue to play. It just didn't make sense at all. Mm. And I had actually won the league best and fairest just in the under 12s 2 years earlier.
Wow.
So it was a complete, you know, didn't make sense at all why I wouldn't be allowed to play just because I'm a girl. But, you know, I'm good enough. I was as big, as strong, tackled as hard, but still it was a no. So I went from there straight to women's football, which it was, I guess, a funny comparison because I'd not allowed to play in the boys' game in case I got hurt because I was a girl. But I went and played in women's footy where there were full-grown women. And I was 15 and I definitely was going to get hurt because there's just bigger, stronger bodies. So it was hard to understand as obviously a young person. Mum and dad also found it hard to understand considering the way I was going and tracking in terms of physicality and able to hold my own. But that was how it was and I just had to live with it. So I did. And then not long after, the AFL Women's became a conversation. So I suppose I was a little bit like, oh, this sucks. What else could I do? And that's when I kind of boxing came into the picture a little bit as well. And then, yeah, AFL Women's came and it was great timing because the minimum age for the league was 18 and I was 18. Mm-hmm. So I think I was fortunate with timing.
So it was 2017 that you were drafted in the inaugural season of the AFLW to Brisbane.
Yeah.
What was that like, having the chance to play in a, I guess, semi-professional league and to play footy at that level?
It's quite funny because I feel like, as you can imagine, everything was just made up, you know, on the go. Mm-hmm. And I liked it that way. I was part of a lot of this making up. I was part of a lot of conversations. Should we do this? Should we make our training outfit this color, or should we go with this color? You know, all these random conversations that you don't even think about, but part of the start of a league, let alone a team and then a season and everything. So I was quite involved in that capacity, which was cool for a 18-year-old at the time. And Sab's actually one of my really good friends, who I am her bridesmaid coming up to her wedding. She then, from WA, decided to come over to Brisbane and play for the Lions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sudden, me and my best friends are playing, or are currently the only two members of the team. And, establishing this first Brisbane Lions team in the national comp for the first time. So I suppose sentimentally, it was an amazing experience and it was something that I'm so glad that I was a part of. But then, yeah, the way the footy unfolded and things like that, it was fun. It was, you know, fun to be a part of and things like that. But probably from a deeper point of view, to be a part of something for the first time ever that no one else would be allowed to take off or able to do was something I can kind of put on my resume, I guess.
Yeah, pretty massive thing to be a part of. You mentioned Sabs there, Sabrina Frederick, a good friend of yours. Did you watch her? She recently won a lot of fans over on SAS. Yeah, did you watch her much on the show? She won a lot of people over, I think, with her. She was pretty steely and determined.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched every second of it. She was, and that's, I thought, nothing other. I would have been disappointed if she wasn't herself on that show, which is determined and wanting to prove people wrong, and, you know, showing that she and women can be as strong as anyone else. And there's no reason why we can't, and obviously there's no reason why women or a woman can't win the thing. And she did it. And I thought it was awesome. And I was so proud as a friend, but even more so as a woman. I was just like, shit, yeah, like what a great opportunity. And of all the people to do that show, she is the perfect one.
Mm.
If I went on it, I would have sucked. I don't know how anyone else would have gone. I would have been whinging from the day one. Too cold. I want my bed. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. It's not my go. I don't, you know, it's not me. But it is Sabs. It is her. She's determined. She's relentless. She wants to prove people wrong. She wants to show that women are strong, that she is strong. She wants to, you know, show her family this amazing side of her. But yeah, I couldn't have thought of anyone better to be the representative for not only AFL Women's, not only women, not only women of colour, not only women of, you know, different minority groups.
Mm.
It was just perfect. It was the perfect storm and she won and I was so excited.
Well done, Sabs. She killed it. So 2018, traded to Carlton, up the Baggers.
Go Baggers.
What was the experience like for you moving away from home and a pretty comfortable upbringing that you had, moving away from family and things like that into the big city with lots of trams and traffic on the roads?
Yeah, Well, that's why I did it. And as crazy as it sounds, that's the exact reason why I did it, because it was too good at home. It was too easy. I had everything I wanted at my fingertips in terms of mum and dad cook me dinner. If I want my washing done, I'll just drop it home, pick it up later. That's too good. And as much as I will whinge about the cold weather and I'll whinge about, you know, not being in a comfy bed and things like that, I do believe that putting yourself outside of your comfort zone where appropriate where valuable to you is going to better you. And that was my opportunity with moving interstate. I'd always liked Melbourne. I'd visited every now and then friends in Melbourne that I'd made through interstate or national under 18 competitions, particularly Kayla Moore, who I used to stay at her house uninvited. I'd just book a flight and I'd just turn up and I'd be like, I'm here for a week. And she'd say, I'm working. And I would just stay in her room watching Netflix for a whole week and then go home. And I'm $400 out of pocket. So I had already kind of like built this little love for Melbourne and this place that was quite, interesting and this big wide world. But it was always easy just to go back home to Brisbane. So I decided, as uncomfortable as it was to ask mum and dad if they were okay with it, because mum obviously was really upset. Dad was upset as well, but more from a, you know, we would do things together every single weekend. We'd do fun activities on the boat or in the car or whatever it might be. So to miss that ease of being able to lock in, I'll just hang out with dad this weekend or I'll go to the movies with mum, was daunting. But I suppose for the experience that it created and the learning and the growth that I got to have from moving interstate, which you cannot get otherwise, I wouldn't have thought, was well worth it. And I moved, mum kind of said, the only way you can move down is if you live with a host family, which the club provides, or the club provide contacts for, and then you kind of set up that relationship. And yeah, I wanted to do that. I wanted to live with a family because I suppose just going down there and finding your feet on your own is much more difficult than it needs to be. So then I landed with this incredible host family, the Camerons. And I, to this day, I'll talk to them every single day. I'll go over there for dinner and I've still got house keys. I'll just go over uninvited. And I've got this second family down here. And so all of a sudden, straight away, it was this daunting moving in state with no one feeling to the day I stepped in that door, I've got a family. So I was very lucky in that regard, I think, with the people I ended up with. But then from there, I had a very, I wouldn't say it was a big change, but like a very intentful mindset that I wanted to do everything, even if it was uncomfortable, even if I wouldn't have done it otherwise because I can't be bothered. And I mean social settings. Like someone will say, hey, you want to, you know, catch up for coffee? If I couldn't be bothered, I would just be like, oh, no, I've got something on, when I wouldn't really. This is back in the day. But now I make an effort. Yeah, I'd love to catch up for coffee. And then we find a time that works and it's not, you know, running me around ragged and then I'm too tired for training and things like that. But yeah, I ended up making a lot of effort with a lot more people. And I've since developed this amazing network and community of friends that I love and would, you know, rely on, and they can rely on me too. And that wouldn't have happened had it not have been for me just deciding, yeah, I'll catch up, you know, whereas previously I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, I like that, putting yourself out of your comfort zone a little bit. Have you thought about cancelling coffee on me a few times? Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. No. So you came along in the phase of my yes phase. So you're lucky.
Nailed it. Now for a quick halftime break. Workplace Law is a law firm focused on supporting and empowering female athletes to take control of their careers. If you can't afford an agent or would like to manage your own career, Workplace Law would love to help you. They provide female athletes with guidance through the complexities of player contracts, negotiations and sponsorship agreements, personal brand building, mentoring with on and off-field careers, crisis management, and work with individuals to ensure they respond to incidents and media stories in an appropriate manner, and advice and representation in disciplinary hearings and tribunals. Find out more at www.workplacelaw.com.au. So, very exciting. Brand new partners are coming aboard to sponsor the podcast, Athletes Authority. So, they're a gym in Artarmon who are incredible. And the reason I actually met them was when Tay was in Sydney. So, we got to go and do some strength testing with them and she pretty much put me to shame with how much stronger her shoulders were than mine. But Carl and Lockie and the team down there are incredible. They've got an amazing setup. They've got physio recovery. They've got mental skills training, the whole works. So super excited to have these guys on board. And yeah, I know Tay would second the fact that they're pretty elite at what they do.
Oh, they're unbelievable. I had the best day when we went there. Up in Sydney, I was visiting from Melbourne. Us and Mitch, our strength and conditioning coach, was visiting, and we got to go in there and meet the guys and use the equipment, and it was unreal. I loved it. I wish I could be, you know, I wish I lived there and I could go and actually be a member there, but I'll just visit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sick setup. So I cannot wait to work with these guys. You touched on earlier that boxing came around at a pretty good time when you were kind of in that weird interim with not being able to play boys footy and playing women's footy and then the AFLW coming around. How did that start?
Well, boxing, it actually, when I was, I think about 12, the story goes, Dad took me down to the PCYC and there was a local boxing class. And I just joined in, and he thought it'd be great cross training, but also in the back of his mind, he kind of had the thought that it's important for particularly young girls to understand their ability, given if there was an incident and you had to protect yourself. That was one thing that I guess he just wanted to tick off, that I understood what I was capable of and weight distribution and, you know, how to hit properly if ever needed. But as much as it was from that point of view, it was also the cross training element and then the discipline element and then, yeah, just learning a new sport. And it's an amazing sport as well. So once the day I started, I'll never forget, and the coach that we had or the class instructor had an eye patch. I don't know whether he had one eye or a scratch or something or a surgery. He had one eye, and I'll remember that it was, yeah, scary. And then so he said, if you would chat when he was talking or whatever, then there'd be discipline, like you'd do 50 push-ups or something. And so I think I remember from day one, this sport took, you know, I was intrigued by this sport because you just didn't mess up. Like you just didn't do the wrong thing. You listened completely, and you heard exactly what they said and the instructions. And if you got it, you know, if you didn't hear it for some reason, it's like, oh God, like what? No, listen. So you become accountable. Yeah. What happens now? So you become accountable for your own actions, so much to the minor details of listening and engaging in the instructions prior. Obviously, as you get more fatigued, that's more challenging. But from that, footy became a bit full on for a bit with underage commitments, underage national teams and things like that. And then I went back once I got my driver's license to the boxing gym and stormed in there with my 12-year-old experience. And I said, I want to fight here, or I want to join up here and train here. And then some guy full of tattoos up to his neck comes over like without a shirt on, and he's like, okay, here's the membership prices, and handed me like a pamphlet. And it was just the best. I was just like, this is where I should be. And he was, as much as he was, you know, tattooed up and muscly and things, he was the most friendly person. And turns out he didn't even work there. He was just, you know, one of the members. And that's corporate box is the gym, and that's the gym's, I guess, philosophy. Mm-hmm. If you remember there, you're not, you know, you're part of something, you're part of a community. And that kind of led me to believe that boxing, as much as it's seen as an individual sport, isn't an individual sport. Yeah. I truly believe it's a team sport. And the only time when you're on your own, I guess, is in the ring. And that's, again, for a very short period of time. And even then you're not, like, you've got your coach, you've got your corner people right there 2 meters away. So that's my experience.
Yeah, you've got a pretty cool team around you with all your boxing. Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with your coach and your support team that have been with you throughout your boxing career so far?
I do. I've got a coach who the day that I walked in and kind of said, I want to join up here, he was the head boxing coach of the gym at that time. And so I actually joined up to corporate box, and I thought I was going to do kickboxing. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing kickboxing and learning that sport, which is completely different to boxing. Muay Thai, I should say. And I was learning kicks, knees, elbows, punches, and all sorts, which was great. And I really enjoyed it. And this is obviously quite a sad part of the story, but my coach at that time, his name was Azatron. He was teaching me kickboxing. And I remember he said I wasn't allowed to do any pad work until I'd learned to skip, because I couldn't skip yet. Mm-hmm. And so I was spending hours just doing skips, and I would be happy with 10 in a row. and then happy with 20 in a row,
yeah,
and then 100 in a row was when I was allowed to do pad work. So that was great. But then all of a sudden, and no one, you know, no one expected it coming, but he passed away. And so I turned up for training and he wasn't coming. So wow. I obviously got told he's not going to be coming. And then that was obviously pretty upsetting. And then I needed a new coach. So Paris took on a lot of Az's clients, mm-hmm. and I was one of them. And he was obviously just boxing, and I kind of gave the time to understand this sport,
yeah,
because it's a whole different sport. So I was like, I'm going to learn this now. And I just loved the skillfulness and the footwork and the evasive nature and the, you know, even the little setup punches, like how you hold something out and then throw another one. It's nothing like what it seems on the outside. Every single punch and a combination is calculated. And even in a fight, as much as it seems like chaos, which it is, but there are ultimately habits that you've developed from training that you might throw a combination that seems like you've just randomly thrown it. But then you can look back at your training videos and you can see that you've thrown that 3 months ago.
Mm.
And I think that's a pretty amazing part of the sport.
Mm.
But then so Farris obviously comes along, and he and the entire gym were obviously mourning Azza, and he was someone who I relied on, and I wanted to, you know, really make him proud from the start because he was such a friendly and welcoming person.
Mm-hmm.
And then since that was, I think, 6 years ago, maybe even more,
mm-hmm.
Since we've just been great friends, like obviously coach,
yeah,
and everything, but yeah. I would, you know, I'd definitely say one of my really close friends who I can rely on. And we have traveled the country. We've been to Sydney, we've been to Melbourne together for training camps or fights. We've been to America together. We go to Thailand. That'll happen after the borders and stuff open up again. So yeah, we spend a lot of time together, and I really enjoy his methods. And Farris is very calm and very much on the same page as I am in terms of training and how to get the most out of me as an athlete, but him as a coach.
Mm.
And that's that mutual respect where yelling isn't needed,
mm.
or criticism isn't needed. It's more learning.
Yeah.
If something's wrong, or if I haven't, you know, trained hard enough for some reason, it's understanding why, as opposed to you should have and regretting it. It's, but why didn't you train well today for some reason? And there very well could be, and likely will be, a valid reason. But yeah, that's how we operate. And he's, yeah, Farris Chevalier. He's actually fighting on March 13th. And so he's getting ready to fight.
Oh, amazing.
In Bendigo.
Yeah.
So I'll be there, hopefully, if we don't have a game that night, which would be frustrating if we did, but I'll be there supporting him because he's been at every single fight supporting me.
That's epic. That's really cool. I want to play you an audio clip. November 2019, so 1 month prior, you'd taken out the Australian middleweight title, and this was from your fight for the Australian super welterweight title.
She's going for the kill here. In Taylor Harris, looking to improve her record to 7 wins.
She's got to know that overhand right's coming. There it is. Oh, she's in big trouble. This could be over. Referee.
So that was the moment that you took out, yeah, your second title for the year, the Australian super welterweight title. Can you tell us a little bit about what that feeling was like winning that fight?
Oh, up until that exact punch, I was actually deceased. Like, I was so exhausted. I was telling someone about this the other day, actually. That particular fight was such a roller coaster.
Mm.
From round one to round, I can't remember if I won in round three or round four. But the first couple or few rounds, I was getting comprehensively beaten,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily so much so that I felt out of it or rocked or that I couldn't come back and win, more the fact that she was on top of me physically, was able to throw more punches and was clearly feeling better.
Mm.
I had lost 10 to 12 kilos for that fight.
Whoa.
And for the weight, so obviously we do a weight cut
mm-hmm.
generally for a fight, but this one was pretty brutal thing to see, 9.5 kilos, which is the super welterweight limit,
mm-hmm.
Or minimum, no, maximum weight, yeah. limit. And so it was a pretty, I suppose, brave thing to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to get 69.5 kilos, considering I'm a tall, you know, quite bigger bodied person. Mm-hmm. And I, right now, for example, I'm about 78, 79 kilos. So that probably explains.
It's a big cut.
How much it was. It was brutal. I did it well, and I did it with the nutritionist, and I did it the most healthy way possible. And we got there and it was no problem. And Faris explained it to me after the fight. It's like driving a new car. Like you this new body that you've never had this with this weight or had this feeling in before. So I got in the ring feeling great, but as soon as I started throwing punches, I just felt like I had no legs.
Mm.
I felt like, I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't think. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. I got back to the corner and it was hard to listen. All I was doing is just trying to get my breath and wondering if my legs were going to stand up even to be able to get back out to fight again. And so the first few rounds were this incredible mental battle. And then I came back either the third or the fourth, and Paris said, can you keep going? And it's important for the coach to ask that when you're not necessarily showing much.
Yeah.
Clearly I wasn't. I wasn't able to, fight back as I usually would. And I said yes. I didn't even think about it, I'm sure. I just said yes.
Mm.
And then he said, right, and then moves on to the to his little speech. And he said, because in the fight, it was an 8-round fight,
mm-hmm.
I think it was the first three that I'd already clearly lost.
Yep.
So I was clearly losing on points. If I lost this next round, the fight was either going to, if it went to 8 rounds, either going to be a draw or she would win. Likely she would win.
Mm-hmm.
And so he basically said that to me, spelled it out. He said, you are going to lose if you do not knock her out now.
Wow.
In his French accent. So I was like, okay. And then I literally just got up and I've never seen or experienced in real life someone stealing belief that genuinely like takes someone from one level to a complete, different. And if it was like a movie, I could feel this energy come through me. It was like electricity. Get up. Okay, if you think I can, obviously I can. I'm not even thinking at this point. All I heard was his instructions.
Mm.
And then so I go out there. And then as the clip you played, obviously I managed to win that fight. But the interesting part, obviously that clip sounds like it was easy sailing or something like that. But it was, I was very much, if there was betting on, I would have been a very long, at the time,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just before that round, yeah. I would have been very long odds and definitely not the favorite. But I managed to do it. And I think that was my very first time that I'd been challenged in that way.
Mm.
And it was really important to make sure that I could do that and come back and continue the fight and then win the fight.
Mm.
Because if I hadn't have, Faris would have, and he kind of told me, he would have suggested that perhaps I shouldn't fight because if you don't have that ability, it's dangerous to fight. If I had gone out and not managed to get the upper hand in that round, I could have got injured really badly.
Mm.
So there were some big lessons to be learnt in that fight, good and productive lessons. But that's how it went down. And then to win was just like this incredible relief. Like I've never really felt such a, relieving feeling when they called the fight off due to knockdown.
Got asked this question the other day, which I found quite hard to answer. Do you reckon that competitive drive that you have in you, that kind of that desire to win and that feeling of getting back on your feet even when you feel like your legs might not stand up beneath you, do you think that's something that's instinctive and inherent, or do you think that's something that people can learn throughout their career, whether that's sport or whatever it is that they're doing?
I think it's something that you only will ever know whether you're that way inclined or not if you're presented with that challenge, and it's a legitimate one. It's not just in a training drill. It's when you're in front of all your friends who you've, asked to buy $50 tickets for.
Yeah.
And your mum's in the crowd already hysterical and only looking through her fingers.
It's always the mums.
And so it's kind of there isn't any other option. You have to get up.
Mm.
And if you don't, it's not only a disappointing thing in the moment, it's disappointing forever.
Mm.
I would never, if I had lost that fight, I would never have forgotten it and never would have forgiven myself for not continuing on. So I think that's the only time you'll ever know if you have that ability. And I do think something is not necessarily with everyone. I think that, clearly there are people who it's fight or flight.
Mm.
That's the exact wording for it.
Mm.
And thankfully I was turns out I have that. And it's ideal when I'm in the sports that I am. Mm. But there are people that don't, and they are in the situation that I was in. They're in the fights. They've got to where they to this point, but that's it. That's the point that they will finish on. And that's okay too. Like, it's not, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I just think it's the differences between athletes, and that's why there are champions and world champions, and that's why there are competitors that don't necessarily make it to the very top.
Yeah. Every week on the show, I get a question from a five-year-old and from my grandma. So this first question is from Frida, who's 5 years old.
Hi, Taylor. How do you kick your legs so high?
How do I kick my legs so high? Well, my dad told me when I was really young, learning to kick a ball, he said follow through is important. So I took that very literally. And whenever I kick the ball, I make sure my leg keeps going all the way through up to my face. And sometimes I would even hit myself with my knee in my face. And one game, I will never forget, I actually hit my nose with my knee from a kick and it bled. And it was so embarrassing. Embarrassing, but really funny. But yeah, so that's the reason. And that's how, I suppose how is I'm just having to be flexible, mm-hmm. which is nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just practice lots and lots doing the same kick over and over. And maybe every time I do it, I get a little bit more extension. I'm not sure.
There was a big moment in 2019 playing in the Pride round against the Western Bulldogs. And Michael Wilson, the photographer, took a photo of you doing that same kick.
Yeah.
Almost kicking yourself in the face with your knee. Obviously, it's a pretty well-known moment. What happened on social media afterwards, the comments from different people that were sexist and derogatory and things like that. And you had a pretty incredible response to that post being taken down initially by Channel 7. How were you so quick thinking on your feet in that moment?
Well, I didn't think much about it. I literally just, that was my reaction. That was my instinct, and that was what's, you know, who I am, and that is to stand up for myself. And I actually just did what I would have done in any other scenario, whether it was on social media, in real life, or, you know, just in a conversation. I stood up for myself and I made a statement as I normally would. And I thought it was a cool photo, so I reposted it, and that was with no intention for what happened to happen. Obviously, I would have hoped people would have seen it and thought, yeah, you're right. Like, it's wrong. There shouldn't be sexism and derogatory comments. But I definitely didn't think what ended up unfolding was going to happen when I posted that. I posted it purely because I knew Mum and Dad would be proud of me for standing up for myself, because they always taught me to.
I'm interested to know what, kind of after that moment, what it felt like. You obviously made a big stand. It was pretty incredible to see how many people got behind you. What did it feel like after that moment, whether it was after it had settled down or things like that, when you actually kind of had to sit with it on your own at home with what had actually happened?
Everything kind of happened in this real whirlwind, because I posted that with, and then I went to bed. So I didn't know what was really happening. As I said, I posted it just with no real reason. I just did because that's what I thought was, you know, what I should do and what I wanted to do. And then the next morning, woken up to heaps of notifications, phone calls, texts, everything asking for me to be in the media. So media requests. And I was like, what for? You know, like, well, what have I done? And then I kind of worked it all out and realized what I had done. And that was create something for people to really kind of latch onto and share around and proud of, say, yep, I agree. Not only people who had profiles, but everyone. And clearly that's why it went viral, because people resonated with it. And it, as much as it was just a statement, it was something that a lot of people felt and wanted to say and wanted to hear and be heard. So that the next morning, there wasn't much downtime at all. Like, there wasn't much, you know, I suppose the story would be more interesting if there was crying and shit like that, but there wasn't. Like, it was a really powerful moment for me, that I felt like I had done the right thing. I stood up for myself. I stood by what I had done, and there was no point where I ever thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that, or maybe I shouldn't have done the kick. Maybe Channel 7 shouldn't have posted it. Nothing like that. It was completely the fact that I had seen some gross shit. I commented on it, or I posted about it and made a comment about it. And then, you know, the rest is history. And it was pretty interesting to see how it all unfolded, because none of it was, you know, planned, or I didn't even think for a second it would go the way it did.
Have you seen from that, obviously it was pretty negative, the initial experience, but have you had any things like from that where you've been able to have like a, I guess, a positive experience through social media, like whether that's people who've been able to reach out because of something similar that might have happened to them or something along those lines?
Yeah, heaps. Most days someone says something really nice and really, shares their story. And it's amazing. And I try and reply as much as I possibly can. But whether it is someone direct messaging or commenting or tagging or posting their own photo and, you know, tagging with the caption, things like that. So I try and see everything on social media. But then even in real life, people come up and say some lovely things, and that particular incident was able to help them in some way. And it could be a really random way. It might not even be just directly because of, you know, bullying or online harassment and things like that. But then I guess the other part is I made this, it was a hashtag called Taylor Kick Challenge. And I thought of it quite soon after, because I was sick of things being kind of negative and whatever. I thought it was a good opportunity to turn it around, because everyone was already kind of doing the kick and mimicking what I was doing and trying it out and tagging me in it. So I made the kick challenge, and I think I had a pair of footy boots that I was giving away. I just, you know, found them. Whoever could do the best kick can have my footy boots. And there was this young girl that I ended up picking, and she got the boots, and we've stayed connected and friends ever since. MJ, her name is.
That's really cool. MJ, what a legend. Question from my grandma.
Yes, from Nan.
Hi, Taylor. What is the biggest misconception people have about you?
Oh, wow, Nan, getting really deep.
She goes deep every time, Granny.
The biggest misconception. Well, actually, and this is funny that she asked that, and one letter is missing, but I'll move this. It's an O. I have oxymoron tattooed on my fingers. This finger's broken, so it's got a little thing on it. And so oxymoron is obviously contradicting terms. And for me, I kind of got it because I'm kind of a contradicting person with my appearance, tattoos. When I play footy, I like to, you know, smash people. When I box, I want to knock people out, all these sorts of things. Mm. I want to, you know, I drive fast cars, I jump off things, I skateboard and whatever else. But in reality, like, I'm incredibly sensitive, and in my life, my people, I should say, everyone around me who I love and care for is what first. And I will always, you know, ensure that they're number one, and I'll protect them. So with any kind of incident on the field, if there was any, you know, rough play or whatever, it's more often than not because someone's come up to me and said, oh, this girl's kind of picking on me or pushing me or whatever. And then they'll get what's coming for them. So that's, I suppose, in a bit of a random way, I assume, I could be wrong, you know, seen because of any, you assume, you know, tattoos are depicted as a certain way, or my style of play is, I must be a bad person, or I must be mean or something like that. But I'll hit someone as hard as possible and it'll be fair, but then I'll help them up if they deserve the help up.
If they deserve it.
But yeah, so maybe that, but I could also be wrong. I could, people could, might not think that, I don't know. Maybe they do think I am a sook because I am.
I don't know what my first impression of you was. I don't know if I thought you were a thug or anything like that, but I can definitely agree. It's been interesting getting to know you, knowing that side to you that you do, like you look after the people in your life. Like even the other day I had to move stuff into storage, and you'd played a game the night before and you rocked up at 8 or 9 in the morning with the big ute ready to load it up with furniture. So it's pretty cool to know someone like you. And I definitely can agree that you'd do anything for the people in your life.
Thanks, Clayzy. Very true. I do. And I think it's so perhaps it is selfish, but it's rewarding for me. Like, it's not as if I'm doing all this, you know, all these extra little things for friends, or maybe trying to make a friend smile or laugh or whatever. It obviously benefits them, but in reality, it benefits you as a person. Like, you feel good and you feel like you've helped someone. And if you're this way inclined, where helping people is, you know, something that you get a lot out of, then it's a great life. Like, people around you are happy and wanting to help you in turn as well. So
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Before we get to the final segment, I wanted to quickly touch on R-Watch, who is the organization that you've been an ambassador for. And I actually got to do some stuff with R-Watch when I was previously back at Rugby Sevens. And I think a big part of the education and training I did with them, I found it so incredible to understand, I guess, the role that sport can play in shaping society, because a big part of that education was around the work they do in preventing domestic violence and how gender equality is a key part of that. And I think with sport, looking at sport, how it's part of Australian culture. You see families who sit on the couch and watch sport together, or they go down on a Saturday and play sport, or they go to the park and kick the footy or take the cricket bat or whatever they do. And I think it was a pretty eye-opening moment for me, realizing what a massive role you can play as an athlete. You're not just out there kicking the footy around, having a bit of fun. You actually have a pretty massive, I guess, responsibility if you want to take that on. What do you feel like that role and that ambassadorship has meant for you?
Well, I think exactly what you said, like, sport is such a driving force for society to be better. It's this huge community of people that gather together and have one or different teams obviously have rivalries. But Patty Kinnersley, who's the CEO of Our Watch on the board at Carlton, she was explaining to us how these Carlton fans, when we have a message or are spreading awareness, or we have a round, whether it's Pride Round, Indigenous Round, we're wearing Gal Carlton Respect socks, all these people, thousands of them, we have 65,000 odd fans at the moment, are automatically tuned in to what we're sharing because they're so invested in this football club. They're financially invested because they've bought their memberships, but they're emotionally and or physically as well, because they're at the games, invested. So when we're doing something and when we're passionate about something, all these people automatically want to be a part of it and want to understand what it is and want to be better in whatever it is that we're sharing. So that's our role. We were wearing orange socks. It's not a big deal. We probably didn't make a difference at all to our game or our preparation or our uniform even looked cooler, I thought. So it's certainly not hard to do your little piece as an athlete, to do your bit for all sorts of different campaigns or in this case, Our Watch, of course, but Carlton Respects, I should say, was that particular initiative. I just think sport is incredibly important for that, in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. My would you rather questions to finish up. Number one, in an AFLW grand final, would you rather miss a goal from 50 out after the siren to lose the game, or turn the footy over and they kick the goal to win?
I think miss it. I guess miss it because then at least you tried. I suppose miss it is the answer.
Okay. Would you rather have arms as long as your legs or legs as long as your arms?
Legs as long as my arms. No, actually arms as long as my legs, because I can reach stuff real high and I can take bigger marks.
Yeah, reach would be good.
Yeah.
Would they be heavy though?
Well, would I have feet hands or not?
I feel like you'd have to have normal hands because otherwise you wouldn't be able to do anything.
Well, I think I would grow strength to be able to lift them.
Final would you rather. Would you rather have a sing-off or a dance-off with Beyonce?
I think I would rather do absolutely anything else in the universe, considering the slaughtering that would take place.
Anything else. Where can people find you on socials?
Instagram is my name, but it's got an underscore in the middle. And my spelling is T-A-Y-L-A underscore Harris. And Twitter, I suppose, if you just type my name in. Facebook's on there. You'll find me.
Thank you so much, Tay, for coming on. I really appreciate your time. It was really cool to have a chat. A lot of things that I haven't really had the chance to chat to you before, and it's pretty incredible, your story. Yeah, and I'm excited to see where you go next.
Thanks, Closey.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, would love it if you could send it on to one person who you think would get something out of it. A big thanks to my team, Bailey, Mike, Bez, and Millie. I couldn't do it without you guys. Find us on Instagram @The Female Athlete Project. See you next time.